Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Tana M. Session with another episode of Stop Being the Best Kept Secret. I'm so honored for our guests to spend time with us today. For those of you who aren't familiar with the show, aren't familiar with me, I am your HR, organizational development, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, thought leader, consultant, motivational speaker, media contributor, the list goes on. Be sure to check out the website, TanaMSession.com. And today we have Dr. Thile Thatch, and I'm going to let her formally introduce herself, and she's going to tell us, what problem do you solve in the world? Dr. Thile, the mic is yours.
Thank you so much. Well, before I start to talking, I want to start by congratulating you on all of your success, the book, the awards, this podcast, which I believe is also an award-winning podcast.
Thank you.
And your recent book acknowledgement on Times Square, the billboard, I was looking at that, and just both of us being from the East Coast, just so proud of you. So
thank you.
Congratulations. I'm proud to know you and especially honored to be on your podcast. So what do I do? Short version, I am a human resources and benefits strategist with a focus on equity, diversity, and inclusion. And basically what I like to say I do is I connect corporations to communities. I connect corporations to diverse communities, and I help corporations through HR, as we both are human resources professionals, do things with an equity lens. I'm also an author. I have just written a book called The Diversity Dilemma, which is my third book. I have a children's book called The Dog Chef, which was a book I love. And I had my very first book was about employee handbooks called Employee Handbooks 101. And last but not least, I do a ton of things.
You do.
A mom, being a wife, being a dog owner. But another thing that I do is I teach at numerous universities. I teach at the University of West LA, where I teach human resources. And I also teach at Cal State Long Beach, thanks to a friend of mine who referred me for this amazing opportunity named Dr. Tane Sessions, leadership development at Cal State Long Beach for corporate organizations.
So when do you sleep? That's what people always ask me.
Never.
Now I get to ask the question, when do you sleep?
You know, I think we have been friends for, you know, since we started working with the National Association of African Americans and Human Resources, because we share a lot of the same passions. I feel like you're my twin in a way.
Yeah.
And I feel older than you, even though I don't think so. You got a perfect.
You're not. I got you by a few years.
But you look, here's the thing.
I might look old.
Anyhow, let me get back on track. But we do similar things. I think in general, I love your book, Stop Being the Best Kept Secret, because some of our first questions and discussions was around, how can I stop being the best kept secret? So what I've always admired about you is how you do your HR and equity work. So, you know, in an upfront, more, you know, focus way, you know, public focus way. And so I literally learned that from you, watching how you move in those spaces and all that to say, that's kind of what I do. I do the same thing in a way, but we do it a little differently, you know, both have our own style. And when do I sleep? I get a good 5 or 6 hours a night. I go to bed sometimes 10 o'clock, then I'm up at 5 a.m. and I get my day started. So.
Oof, yeah, I know that drill very well, very well, all too well.
Yes.
And you're right. I like the fact, you know, I've known you. I remember when I first moved to LA about 10 years ago, this summer actually be 11. And I was an active member and was doing some programming for the National Association of African Americans in HR back in New York. And so when I told the team I was moving to LA, they were like, okay, you got to connect with the team in LA, you know, keep the work that you're doing going. You know, it's a great way to network and kind of get in to know some of the HR professionals locally. So that was one of the first things I did, was I sought out the local chapter, and that's how I met you. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's from the East Coast, South Carolina. I'm from South Carolina. We do the same work. Like, this is amazing. And then you were in the diversity space, and you were head of diversity, I think, at LA Live? I can't
Chief
remember. I can't.
Diversity Officer at Live Nation.
Yes, that's it. Yep. And I was like, I have got to know her.
Yeah, so I part just for you know this, but just to share, and I always look, I don't ever want to be my best kept secret. So
Amen.
I have to say, I was the very first diversity, equity, and inclusion person at Live Nation Entertainment. I created their very first initiative. I was tapped on the shoulder by the CEO to create the job description, the objectives, the goal, and it became a global initiative for close to 15,000 employees
Wow, what a legacy.
less than, thank you, less than in 2 years. And I, originally I knew nothing about it. It was a stretch goal for me as I was leaning going headed to be the director of HR. That was my main goal. And in that career progression, I said, oh, can I have a stretch goal? I want to look at diversity. And my boss at the time, who was actually my friend, believe it or not, she told me that I would get fired.
Oh,
She
wow.
was like, don't do that.
Don't do it.
She basically was like, don't do that. You're going to be put on the list and they're going to fire you. And I thought, maybe she's having a bad day. But honestly, from that point on, I became a target of all types of progressive discipline, comments, macroaggressions, microaggressions. And that began my journey in DEI and this hard work that we do and the injustices that we see every day.
Yeah, and I think people forget because we do the work that we're also, survivors of the work, right?
Exactly.
We've experienced it, and that's what I talk about in my book, and I've had other women share their stories in there as well. Like, it's so funny. You think in the moment you're the only one experiencing these things, and then you take a step back, do some healing, start talking to other, Black women in particular, and you find out like, oh my gosh, my story is your story. Like, I wasn't in this alone. Like, there's so many people, and still to this day, we're in 2024. That is still experiencing that. And look how many DEI people have gotten fired, right? Over the last few years. First
So,
one on the list.
yeah. So there's another pattern that happens when they don't get fired. They just mysteriously disappear or they, but yet they have no other opportunity to go to. And then they, that recently happened at another job that I left as head of DEI just this week. That person, they'll know if they listen, that person stepped down this week. They didn't make it a year. So I talk about that in my book. I think you talk about it in yours. And the other side of it is just the trauma. And for me, it was compounded because I had never been in an executive level role. And I was so excited because, as Black women, a lot of us lean to HR because that's where we can find professional growth. But also, I wanted to be in the C-suite. So now I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm in the C-suite. And then I just felt so inadequate because I was constantly told that I didn't have executive presence. And I was made to feel that the company wasn't becoming diverse or inclusive because of what I was lacking. And I have to tell you, Dr. Tana, I totally believed it at the time. I'm like, if I was smarter, if I went to Harvard, if I was more conscious of Black. Pan-African movements. I mean, I had like anything that I could have possibly be lacking, I blame myself for the company's lack of commitment to diversity. And I know now that was a lie, right? I know
Yeah,
that.
they gaslit you big
I
time.
was so I didn't even know what gaslit was.
We didn't, I
I didn't know I was being gaslighted. And so
didn't
that's
either.
And I was just so saying, not to make it about me, that's why it's so important for our work that people have vocabulary around what's happening. Because I'm like, I'm feeling something, but I don't know what this is called. It just felt like a phenomenon, like a phenomenon is happening.
I commend the next generation when I think about Gen Y, Gen Z, because not only do they have the language, but they also have the voice to speak to power, right? In ways that our generation, Gen Xers, didn't. We pushed the envelope and we were anti-status quo to a point, but we were also very fearful of job security and, not wanting to get fired. And many of us were responsible for children and households. And so I know that was my story where I didn't want to push the envelope, but so far, beyond what the majority were comfortable with, right? So you kind of assimilate into those systems in a way that makes them comfortable, makes you feel like okay, I'm not really doing the work. I'm getting a great check for it, so I'm not causing any problems. I'm not on anyone's list. So let me just stay the course, right? Until you can't. It starts eating away at your soul.
Exactly. And I was on lists, and I didn't even know I was on a bunch of lists.
Right.
It was so funny because I would get comments like, she's too big for her britches.
Oh.
And, she's trying to tell the senior leadership what to do. So anytime I would show up and be confident, I was labeled as arrogant. And as you know, I'm so happy you know me. I'm just so,
The opposite.
I don't even have time to be arrogant. Half the time I have to be reminded. Like, you need to talk about that. But anyhow, anytime I would try to just be confident in my leadership, I would, and that became a pattern at that time, only when I started doing DEI work. As an HR leader, I didn't really get that level of pushback. And one thing that was interesting too, I've always had my master's, at that time I had my master's in business. And so I thought I would use that, right? And that was the reason I was being promoted. So I just wanted to go back to what you were saying. I truly, at the time, believed in meritocracy, that I was being rewarded for my work, all my, at the time, over 15 years of doing this work. And, both of us know that that was not what was happening, and I had to learn how to move differently. And again, like you said, I'm hoping to, we're both working together to teach the next generation to shift their priorities, because that formula does not work.
It does not work. It does not work. And I'm hopeful, cautiously optimistic even, because we do have more Gen Xers moving into leadership, into C-suite, CEO positions. The average age of a CEO as of last year was 54 years old. So that's, right around our age group. I'm hoping that, they'll have a keen eye and really listen to the next generation and not just try to do things as they've always been done, in particular thinking about how the boomers ran businesses and how they managed talent. So my hope and goal is that, with more Gen Xers moving into the C-suite, more Gen Ys moving into leadership, senior leadership roles, that we'll start to see that pendulum swiftly move in a way that, we've been hoping and working towards seeing during our careers and during our lifetimes. I tell people now, like, look, I have more years behind me than ahead of me, and I'm good with that. And I may not be the one to see it in my lifetime, but I'm hoping my son sees it, or, my grandkids see it, right? And they can look back and see the work that we were doing. In particular, I would say over these last 4 years, in a way that hadn't been done before around, DEIB, but really just, putting the employees first and not the bottom line. I think that's when there will be true equity and inclusion and belonging. And I think that's hopefully the path that we're on right now. What do you think?
Wow, you said a lot. And the only thing I would disagree with is that we have at least both of us another 50 years left. So we got
Well, not in the workforce.
I can't imagine us. We're always be working. We'll
I
be
know. You're right.
trying to write another book, trying to go to, oh, I'm on my way to a speaking engagement. Oh, I'm on my way to Africa. Oh, I'm helping. Well,
Exactly.
I'm
Running a
point.
coffee shop somewhere or
I'm in
something.
no shop at my beat. So no, there's no rocking chair for us. So
No, I believe that too.
that's the only part I didn't agree with. But in general, I agree. And I think, yeah, we definitely have the opportunity to see this level of inclusion and belonging. It's really interesting. I was on a speak, I was in on two speaking engagements this week, and we're still at And we always say, as DEI person, people are on different levels of their journey, right? Oh, everybody's on different. It's like a script almost. And don't forget, everybody's different levels of their journey. But honestly, it's time for y'all to be on a different level of your journey.
Some
I'm
people stuck.
tired of defining the diversity. Come on, people. Enough. Y'all look at the news. I mean, look at the read a paper. Why are we still saying diversity is the people in the room? I'm just saying. So need to get past where that is common language. We don't have to keep defining those basic things, but we are getting, at least half the room, half the room, half the room starting to understand the definition, but it does trouble me that not the rooms still do not understand basic definitions around diversity, inclusion, and equity. And for those who are listening and you're one of those people, I'm not trying to offend you. I'm just trying to say, do better. Like, it's time for you to catch up. And that's the only way we're going to really see the next generation. But I'm so grateful because, like you said, people like us are the ones who don't know the definition.
Yeah.
Now we're in roles of leadership, and we're not, some of us are not that convinced that DEI is important.
No.
And it's us, it's our age group, it's our people. And I talk about that in my book. It's just, again, in my spirit, I kept thinking about my experiences, and one phenomenon that happened was this Black female overseer. This is what I talk about, the Black female overseer. Mm-hmm. And so here's the thing, I'm going to make it real quick on the Black female overseer, because we could probably talk all day about it. It's just how I personally was being groomed to be a Black female overseer, to be the one that kept the people of color in check. And that is, you know, a corporate strategy 101 for some organizations, is to hire a person of color so they can keep those people in check. So my point, I'm not going to belabor that, it's in the book and you know what I'm talking about. My point is to go back to what we were talking about, is to ask yourself, are you being groomed to be an overseer?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to push back from being the overseer, right? Whether it's for your generation, whether it's for your race, your ethnicity, for, right? This is what happens in organizations. They pick you sometimes so that you can oversee those underrepresented people because they don't want to be bothered. So they're like, what are they doing? You need to get them in check. And we've seen that. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I see your head shaking.
Listen, I'm like, you have said a mouthful, because that was so my experience and I didn't categorize it that way, but that's exactly what was being done. I was being groomed to be the overseer, to be the model Black employee that everyone should try to be like. And I'm the one who had to do the disciplinary discussions, you know, looking across the table at people who look like me, firing them, impacting their households. You know, I was the poster child for that. And I received hate mail. I remember receiving hate mail, like letters on my windshield from employees about the work I was doing and how I was being used. And I was a puppet and I was a sellout and I was an Oreo and like all these other names they would call me, right? And yes. Wow, that's exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, Dr. Delay, yeah. Wow.
Take a deep breath on that one.
That's a phenomenon right there.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it hasn't stopped.
Mm-hmm. And we're still healing.
Yes.
I had the same experience. I was called the Oreo Aunt Jemima. And I talk about it in a podcast I did a few months ago. And I didn't even, it just came out. All I could say is the Black employees, the people of color, they were absolutely right. I was absolutely those things.
Yep.
And I would constantly say, I'm sorry. I can't help. This is what you need to do. And I would get into meetings where a C-suite person would just, I'm coming to talk about strategy and they're coming to tell me I need to get Tana in check.
Yes.
I thought we were talking about the recruiter strategy. Well, what's going on with Tana? I'm like,
yes.
Are you worried about Tana? But I didn't know. I didn't know that's what I was being used to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing, it started like you just described, and it hurts my soul. Seriously, when I hear, you know, we're in these roles trying to support people of color, support all employees. And then we're used as this tool. We can't really talk about it with anyone without jeopardizing our own career. And then we're like stuffing all of this trauma and hurt. And so this is where we are now, hope and for you and I to be, you know, support for not just the next generation, but for anyone. And that's what the book, that's why I wrote the book, The Diversity Dilemma.
Now I want you to talk about it. So tell us about the book and tell us, what prompted you and what are you hoping people take away from it?
Thank you, Dr. Tate. So number one, thank you for doing the foreword for my book. So please look for
I was honored.
to give a good work here. So The reason for the diversity dilemma was basically everything we just shared. Going through these experiences in the workplace and not being able to put words to these feelings, it was an act of therapy for me to just document, oh, yeah, that's the Black female overseer. Like to be able to get that out, to be able to call things out. I actually, in the book, I share my resignation letter to one of the companies and just how I had to put the CEO on notice through my resignation letter of what was missing, the performative actions, all the things. I mean, we talk about this all the time. But hopefully, the reader that needs this book can literally copy and paste that same letter and give it to their CEO. And they can use these words and they when they think about, or if they experience what we just talked about, being groomed, that they know this is really the crossroads for you. Are you going to allow yourself to be groomed, or are you going to push back and just look for another opportunity? Right? You have to, there's a point in your career, which we both had to make, where you have to make a choice. Are you going to be an advocate for equity? And then my favorite part of the book is really the end, where I talk about different frameworks, and I have the 7D framework, and I have the 7R framework, and the 7A framework. But the 7R framework is really around rest. And
Ooh, share those.
yes, let's just
Because
pause.
I remember I asked you when you sleep, you
Enough.
asked me the same
So
question.
the 7R blueprint, what I call it, and it was very much inspired. Shout out to Trisha Hershey. She wrote a book called Rest is Resistance. And it gets into, she didn't talk about the Black female overseer, but she does talk about a lot. I say this, I mean what I say when I say read that book, because she talks about how we're now living in a time where it's a kind of a carryover of this plantation mentality in America, you know? So there's a lot I could say about that, but I'm going to focus on positive right now.
Okay.
So number one is rest and getting rest. And what I realized as a corporate, executive is you can't really think or be innovative unless you get rest. Number two is restoration. Number three is being rejuvenated. Four is your relationships. Now, this relationship with you and I just treasure it, making sure you do treasure those relationships. Number five is remembering. So for me, I've spent a lot of time remembering where I came from, remembering my ancestors. And then six is recalibrating, and seven is reinventing. So as I talk about this book, I want people to know if they walk away with nothing, I want that focus to be on the 7 R's, taking care of yourself. So if you're tapped on the shoulder to lead, whether it's HR, DEI, whatever that is, how are you taking care of yourself? How are you protecting your mental wellness, your mental well-being? Because ultimately, I thought I was going crazy. I thought it was me. I thought I had lost my mind. My parents suffered. My children suffered. I was constantly covering. I was thinking when you were talking, and I'll last point I'll make about this. I share this with my students all of the time. And I think to this day, people still don't know that I have three adult children and a grandson. And people say, you have children? You know why they don't know? Because I never talked about them at work. I never bought their pictures. They didn't even know I had kids.
Wow, now that's covering.
Cover to the point, people, I never brought my children's pictures into work. And I look back now and I'm just like, what else didn't I do? What else did I do to just protect myself and make myself feel safe? What else did I sacrifice? And I'm still peeling back those layers of who was I? I don't even know who I was sometimes. Like, who was I? I just was who they wanted me to be.
What you thought they expected, what was rewarded. I remember that reminds me of a conversation I had. So my son's 28. When he graduated high school, we took him out to dinner, and I was telling him how proud I was of him and everything like that. And he said, "Mom," he said, "you missed like almost every event I did through high school." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "You didn't go on any field trips. You really didn't make it to my track meets. You were always in the city." So we lived upstate New York. I was commuting 2.5 hours each way to work, to downtown like Manhattan. And I said, well, Brandon, I did it so that we can have the house that we live in, and you can go to a really great high school, and you can have the sneakers you like and the clothes and everything. He said, but well, what I wanted was you. Oh, wow.
It's a lot.
And I had to think, like, was it really worth it? Right? All the hours I put in, still caught hell, still was on list that I didn't even know I was on, still being told I wasn't doing enough and you need to do more. First one in the office, last one out, turn on the lights, turning off the lights in the office, making the coffee because I was the first one there. And I was like, yeah, I gotta do better. I gotta do better for me, right?
Well, I appreciate you sharing that. And I went through similar experiences. You mentioned I lived in South Carolina, but before that, I lived in New Jersey. And so with both of my pregnancies with my two boys, I was literally on the subway commuting. My last day with my middle son, I was holding onto the strap on my way home on the subway and went into labor when I got home.
Oh.
And no one gave me a seat that day. I never forget. So
Oh. Oh,
I'm
they're ruthless. They're ruthless in New York.
like, nobody told you to get pregnant. And I was like, and then one woman got up and finally, you're right. But I remember working too. I had my
The
baby
baby.
and coming back in with milk leaking out of my breast. And people ask me, where's some report? Where's that report? I'm like, I'm just trying to stop from leaking. Okay. So yes, it was a lot. And I think about, and this is where we get into remembrance. And this is what holds my sanity when I think about how I wasn't there at times for my children because of my career looking back. And I think about my grandmother and her sisters, and they were something else. But what I'll say is they worked at least 20 hours a day, three jobs. Being help, being domestic helpers, domestic workers.
That's no rest right there.
No rest. My grandmother had knots on her head because she worked in a mental hospital where she would clean the, patients' rooms. And I didn't quite understand, but I remember she had this gigantic knot on her head that came from one of the patients hitting her in the head with a chair. And honestly, that image is, I'm like, I'm not getting hit in the head with a chair.
Right. Least not physically. Maybe figuratively.
We moved up just a little bit. We are not being beaten physically at work.
Right.
Now, grandma be proud.
That's progress.
Ooh, we got some progress. And our grandparents, and I believe, your parents would also be proud, us attaining what we've done and laying down the
Sure.
foundation, being the first, being, getting our PhDs, things like that.
Yeah.
And I'm just grateful that we're at a place where we can talk about it and start the healing. But
Yeah.
people have paid a lot of dues just for us to even get abused at work too.
Exactly.
But we don't
Exactly.
want that to continue. We want that.
Nope. Break the curse, break the cycle, all those things.
To
All
break.
the things. Yep. So Dr. Delay, I want you to tell people how they can get in touch with you. Who's your ideal client? What are your favorite projects that you're working on right now?
Oh my goodness. I have to say, my favorite project is writing. I love writing books. So I'm having so much fun with the diversity dilemma, speaking to people like you, and just having this conversation. I'm telling you, I might have to cancel my therapist because
Like I'm covered.
I feel like light. I just feel free lately. It just feels so good. So going into organizations and telling and showing them how HR can, because we're HR experts, just
Yep.
people listen. We are HR experts. I know a lot of HR people, and Dr. Tana and myself are the best. I say that with
Thank
confidence.
you.
No, we are. And so, using what we do know as HR experts to help people really change their policies around equity and inclusion, because there's nothing new. I think about the Equity Equal Pay Act, that was in 1920.
Right. How long have we been talking about this? Is not new. Like my grandmother used to say, there's nothing new under the sun.
Nothing new. And so we have a opportunity, and we both are have the ability as HR people to show them this is not new. We have Title VII of the Civil Rights Act from 1964
Right.
that you can use to move your organization into equity and inclusion. And so that's the fun stuff I like. I like to tell them, this ain't new.
That's
There's
right.
laws. And congratulations again on your pursuit for your law degree, because you,
Thank you.
I'll just
Halfway there. I'm halfway there.
So using the law, using my PhD is in public policy.
Mm-hmm.
I love, love, love talking about public policy and how it forces change.
Yes.
Because once I get that into policy and I get that into law, now there's repercussions when you don't do things.
That's right.
Everything else is talk. And
we
I know
talk about
that's,
that.
yeah.
We talk about that in law school too. Public
Yeah.
policy drives a lot of statutes. Yep.
And that's why actually that experience I shared with you motivated me to get my PhD in public policy administration and law. I have a minor in law. I was not going to do law school like you. So I will reach out to you to get some help. But that was important because I saw that policy is what is going to drive real change. And so last thing I'll say, I love being out in the community, letting change start locally. So as you know, I was an elected official in Van Nuys for 4 years doing the elected official role as a neighborhood council member. But it really opened my eyes to how much can be changed locally. And we
it
need
starts there.
It starts there. We can't look to the federal government.
Right. But then it's too late.
Anywho, so I always like to throw that in. So that's what I love to do. I love to talk about, look, you can do this. Let's write some policy. Let's change it. And I'd love to be out in the streets with my signs. I love all of that.
Yeah, I've seen you out there. I love it. I love it. All right, so where can people find you?
Oh, thank you. See, that's why I need my friends to keep me on. So my name is Thele Thatch. I have Thele, Thela. Thatch, thatch.com. Definitely could Google me. My book is on Amazon, and The Diversity Dilemma has its own website too. So you really want to find me, spell my name right. Thela.
Start there.
Thele Thatch.
Thele Thatch. I love it. I love it. And before I let you go, I do have to say I thank you again, because I remember when I wanted to write my first book and I found out that you had written your book. And I said, how'd you do it? What does it take? You know, were you scared? And you almost walked me through it, like step one, step two, step three. I have to thank you, because now, like yourself, I'm written 4 books, you know, 3 self-published, you know, the way you showed me, the last one through a publisher, and I would have never done it. I don't think I would have had the nerve to do it if you had not shared your knowledge in your journey. And you have been always such a giving person with information. You've never hoarded it. You've never seen people as competition. You've seen them as complimentary. And we've learned from each other so much over the years. And as you said, share business and support each other and support each other's business and, you know, put money in each other's pockets. And it's just been a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing. And I wish more and more people would do it, especially Black women.
Yes. Oh, you almost made me cry. I'm so stinking proud of you. I'm always on life, happy heart, go. Cheerleader. All right. Yay. Keep going.
You do.
Up. And so special happy birthday. I don't, you know, I know this won't air on your birthday, but just want to say, I am so grateful you were born.
Oh, thank you. I feel the same way for you. I'm so glad our paths crossed.
Me too.
Yep. You're stuck with me now. I'm not going anywhere.
Oh, same. Same here. Well,
I might go to Africa, but we'll be connected through virtual.
I'm going to Africa too. I'm right behind. I keep telling you, I'm right behind you. I went to Senegal because of you.
Yeah, that's right.
Africa. Shout out to Tiffany awaytoafrica.com. Got to shout her
yes.
out. And then doing work in the Ivory Coast. So that's another thing I love to do. I have a foundation called Time to Dream Foundation, and we do nonprofit work with other nonprofits in the Ivory Coast. And last year we did an amazing entrepreneurial conference that I just can't even express in words how impactful and amazing it was to be where I'm from, because my DNA results came back that I'm 74% Senegalese.
Wow.
And now I'm learning that I'm a griot. I'm a storyteller. It's so my ancestors have told me in some way that this is who I am. And what's so interesting, Tana, is my children are also storytellers.
Wow.
It is so deep. And the storytellers in Africa, it is genetic.
Yes, I was gonna say it's in the genes.
It's genetic. And I see, and now it's like, now that I knew where I'm
It
from,
makes sense.
it's like,
Like,
I'm a story.
duh.
Here's the storytellers. Okay. So anyhow, I'm looking forward to more time with you in Africa and doing projects in
Yes.
Africa and getting our people to not, they're still, again, people are still on this narrative. They're afraid to go to Africa.
I know. I don't understand it. And with so much visibility now in terms of what it's like to go with social media and people sharing their experiences, I'm like, what don't you get? Like, you know, this is why the white people been holding on to it all these, you know, centuries. They never wanted us to know that it was such a magnificent place. They held on to it for themselves for a reason. Hello.
Yeah, there was someone, I won't, there was an entertainer, I won't say their name, but they made an excellent point that Africa is one continent that needs no other resources from anyone else. If you think about our country, we have to pull resources from other countries and take their
Exactly.
natural resources. Africa needs nothing,
Nothing.
nothing from no other continent.
Nothing from no one.
It's
Exactly.
that nothing from no one. And that, and as Black people, neither do we.
Boom.
Just
Mic
gonna.
drop. Perfect ending. Perfect ending. Drop that mic.
That's it.
Dr. Thile.
It was so much fun.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. I'm so glad that you had the time to meet with me and be on the podcast today. I know people are going to enjoy this conversation. And again, I encourage everyone to check out her website, drthile.com, thediversitydilemma.com. Check out the book available on Amazon. You won't regret it. Everyone, thank you for joining us for another episode of Stop Being the Best Kept Secret. Dr. Thile, thanks for joining us.
You got
Always
it.
a pleasure. Everyone, make sure you come back and check out new episodes. Stop Being the Best Kept Secret. We are officially in season 4. And this episode, when it drops, make sure you like, subscribe, and also share. Everyone, I'm Dr. Tana M. Session, and thanks for joining.